Bridgebank helps breakthrough ideas actually break through and remains dedicated to providing financial solutions to those committed to leveraging innovation to make the world a better place. Bridgebank, a division of Western Alliance Bank. Bridgebank, be bold, venture wisely.
Hey, it's Avery Trufelman, host of Articles of Interest, and I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments yesterday in a case that could make it easier for cities to crack down on homeless encampments. It's being called the High Court's most consequential case on homelessness in decades and is being closely watched in our state with nearly half the nation's unsheltered homeless population here. The case, Grants Pass versus Johnson, is about how far cities can go to restrict unhoused residents from camping or sleeping on public property without violating their constitutional rights. We unpack the case and how the court might rule after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Supreme Court justices seemed divided yesterday on whether cities should have more flexibility to crack down on homeless encampments and punish people, as a local Oregon law does, for sleeping outside when no shelter is available. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson expressed concern the ordinance amounted to penalizing people for being unhoused.
All humans engage in the act in question, sleeping. And yet the statute operates, or the ordinance operates, to penalize only certain individuals, those who have no choice but to do that act in public.
Meantime, Chief Justice John Roberts questioned whether federal courts should be the ones to determine how cities address homelessness.
Why would you think that these nine people are the best people to judge and weigh those policy judgments?
We learn more this hour about Grants Pass versus Johnson. It's being called one of the most important cases related to the rights of the unhoused in decades, with major implications for California, where dozens of elected officials have weighed in on the case, including Governor Newsom, who said prior federal rulings have become roadblocks to cities trying to keep the unhoused and the public affected by encampments safe. Joining me now is Marisa Kendall, homelessness reporter at Cal Matters. Marisa, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Megan Ryan, professor of law at Southern Methodist University. Professor Ryan, glad to have you too.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So Marisa, let me start with you. This case originates in the Oregon city of Grants Pass. Tell us about Grants Pass and the unhoused community who lives there.
Yeah, so Grants Pass is a small city in southern Oregon, about 40,000 people, and they have an estimated homeless population of about 600. And as is the case in many California cities, there was a lot of tension between the homeless population and the rest of the community. There were encampments in parks. Housed neighbors were complaining that the camps were unsafe and unsanitary. There was just a lot of tension there. So the city passed an ordinance prohibiting camping. The difference in Grants Pass is they do not have very many shelter options. They have a handful of beds in a religious shelter, but they come with a lot of restrictions and requirements, including requirements to attend prayer services.
attend prayer services. And how large is the population in Grants Pass, do we know, in terms of the unhoused or unsheltered homeless population?
It was estimated to be about 600.
And the shelter itself has?
It has just a couple dozen beds.
Huh. So, Megan, in October, advocates for the unhoused, they filed a lawsuit against this ordinance, saying that local governments can't make it a crime to camp and to sleep on public property, especially when no adequate shelter is available. Can you remind us what the argument was that the advocates and the homeless residents were making?
Sure. The argument is that Grants Pass ordinances violate the Eighth Amendment's prohibition on cruel and unusual punishments. And when we think about cruel and unusual punishments, ordinarily we think about the type of punishment imposed or the extent of the punishment and whether it's proportionate to the crime of which someone's convicted. Plaintiffs in this case were relying on a very short line of cases from the Supreme Court talking about status crimes, and they were arguing that the ordinances essentially criminalize the status of being homeless.
So what ultimately happened at the district level and at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal level?
So at the district court and the Ninth Circuit, The judges relied on precedent in the Ninth Circuit, which includes California and Oregon, that says that the Robinson case, which is a Supreme Court case from 1962, which says it's unconstitutional under the Eighth Amendment to criminalize status, that did indeed apply in this case. And so that the ordinances were unconstitutional. And so there was an injunction imposed prohibiting Grants Pass from enforcing at least a couple of the ordinances.
So then what did cities say was the impact, and California cities, Marisa, of that kind of ruling at the Ninth Circuit level?
Yeah, so that ruling and a prior ruling that came to the same conclusion have been used in multiple lawsuits in California cities. You know, if a city tries to clear an encampment, there have been multiple cases where a district judge locally has stopped that sweep or postponed it if there are not enough shelter beds available for everybody. So city officials, even the governor, complain that because of those rulings, they don't have the freedom to manage encampments the way that they need to be able to keep people safe.
And let's go to yesterday's arguments and unpack the arguments that we heard yesterday. What did the lawyer for Grants Pass say the Ninth Circuit ruling effectively did for Grants Pass, Marisa?
Yeah, they said a similar thing to what California cities are complaining about. They said, you know, because the court tied their hands and they can't enforce their ordinance, encampments have been allowed to proliferate and they don't have one of the tools they need to get people off the streets and into shelter and connect them with services.
So you, Marisa, have talked with a lot of unhoused activists and advocates about this case and the toll of encampment suites. Can you tell us what they told you?
Yeah, so people who are living unhoused, as well as experts who, you know, medical experts, mental health experts who, know about the tolls this takes on the population, all say that encampment sweeps have really detrimental effects to the mental, physical health of people and their well-being. People often lose treasured possessions. They lose medication, medical supplies. They lose things like tarps and sleeping bags that protect them from the elements. They have to leave their community that they've developed, and it also cuts them off from service providers who they've been in touch with. You know, they lose touch with their medical providers, people who are trying to help them find housing. And then if you add a citation or even arrest on top of it, it can add debt to them, and an arrest can make it harder for them to get a job and to find housing. So, experts say the sweeps really just make it harder for people to get back on their feet.
So interestingly, even though California cities have been saying that they've been sued over their efforts to remove encampments and that it's really tied their hands, essentially, they seem to take what I think you described as a middle-of-the-road position when they were writing and weighing in on this case. What did they try to do, Marisa?
Yeah, well, especially in California, you know, liberal leaders of liberal California cities, the last thing they want to do is be seen as, quote unquote, criminalizing homelessness. So they're really trying to walk a fine line here. They really want to have more freedom to enforce their ordinances, but they don't want to be seen as arresting people simply for being homeless. So they filed briefs supporting neither party in this case. And their argument was, we don't want to do what Grants Pass did. We don't want to take the extreme step of making it illegal to camp anywhere in the entire city, even if there's no shelter beds. But we do want more flexibility.
We're talking with Marisa Kendall, homelessness reporter for Cal Matters, and Megan Ryan, professor of law at Southern Methodist University. We're looking at how the Supreme Court could rule in Grants Pass versus Johnson, what we heard in oral arguments yesterday and what the implications of this case could be for California. You're invited to join the conversation. What do you think of Grants Pass's attempt to outlaw sleeping in public? What are your questions about the case? Do you have experience with homelessness or encampment sweeps? Are you a city official or worker? What's your experience moving people to shelter or trying to? You can email forum at kqed.org. You can find us on our social channels at KQED Forum. We're on X, Instagram. Our digital community is Discord. And you can call us at 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. And Steve on Discord writes, I have seen some news stories saying that the justices' questions have indicated a likelihood of the city prevailing in this case. Other news stories haven't said this. I've seen indications of a hardly unexpected ideological split among the nine of them, but enough hard questions posed by some conservatives that there's no evident consensus. Is there a solid read on how the SCOTUS nine are thinking? Ooh, Steve, that is the central question. I'd love to get, Megan, your take on how the justices appeared to be leaning overall.
I think the oral arguments weren't a huge surprise in terms of what the justices asked the petitioner and the respondents in this case, although I was surprised that the justices were harder on the petitioners on the city of Grants Pass than I expected them to be. But I still do expect that the justices, the court, will reverse in this case. I think it's unlikely that the court is going to say that this is an Eighth Amendment violation. I do think there'll be some splintering of the justices, though, as for the basis as to why this might be the case. So, for example, I think some of the more conservative justices were suggesting that perhaps these types of issues don't fall under the cruel and unusual punishments clause of the Eighth Amendment, and instead they might be better based in the due process clause of the 14th Amendment. We heard some discussion about the necessity defense related to the substantive aspects of criminalizing and defending against a criminal claim. And then we heard some justices, some of the conservative justices like Justice Barrett, talking about basing this ruling in the Robinson case. But a lot of the conservatives, which is the case that the Supreme Court decided in 1962, saying that you can't criminalize status. But the conservative justices raised a lot of questions about line drawing as to when the status of homelessness or another status changes into conduct, which generally can be criminalized, such as using drugs or maybe sleeping outside in a public area with a blanket or camping.
You mentioned that justices were hard on the Grants Pass attorney. Let's hear a little bit of Justice Sotomayor.
If a stargazer wants to take a blanket or a sleeping bag out at night to watch the stars and falls asleep, you don't arrest them. You don't arrest babies who have blankets over them. You don't arrest people who are sleeping on the beach, as I tend to do if I've been there a while. You only arrest people who don't have a home.
And here's Justice Kagan.
Federal regulation
is a biological necessity. It's sort of like breathing. I mean, you could say breathing is conduct too, but presumably you would not think that it's okay to criminalize breathing in public.
I would like to point to the federal regulation.
And for a homeless person who has no place to go, sleeping in public is kind of like breathing in public.
We'll have more after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about what's being called one of the most significant cases on the rights of the unhoused in decades. And here is Justice Sotomayor during oral arguments yesterday.
Where do we put them if every city, every village, every town lacks compassion and passes a law identical to this? Where are they supposed to sleep? Are they supposed to kill themselves not sleeping?
The case is Grants Pass versus Johnson, and Grants Pass has passed ordinances that would make it criminal for homeless residents to sleep outside, even when adequate shelter may not be available. And right now, justices are weighing in on how much to either look at this particular ordinance or to think broadly about a city's rights to regulate homeless encampments within its boundaries. Marisa Kendall is with us, homelessness reporter for CalMatters. Megan Ryan is with us, professor of law at Southern Methodist University. And you, our listeners, are with us, emailing us at forum@kqed.org, finding us on our social channels at KQED Forum, calling us at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Let me go to Peter in San Francisco. Peter, you're on.
Yes, hi. I would like to raise the question, which I haven't heard discussed or argued, of discrimination, inequity in access. So, for example, somebody who owns a car but no garage is basically using the street for movement and the curb for parking 24 hours a day with no problem. There might be some regulations about when to park and so on. Somebody who has a driveway or builds a driveway to their home garage, they basically have a reserved parking spot that covers the entrance of their garage and the sidewalk of the garage so that they can get in and out 24 hours a day all year long. Street closures happen for festivals and parades in San Francisco for several days, I think. There's an opera thing that closes a portion of a street or a street for days on end as they construct tents and whatnot. So it seems to me that for folks with money, let's put it that way, or more money, there are privileges given for the occupation of actual spaces that are much more than sleeping or even tent spaces, 24/7 at times. And yet for somebody whose purpose is to sleep, no, they can't. Not only they can't do that, but they're going to be criminalized for it. It seems to me a great inequity based on pretty much purpose, use, and also access to money.
Peter, thanks. And Megan Ryan, that is what Sotomayor's point was about. A stargazer is not someone who's going to be arrested by police. A baby under a blanket is not going to be someone arrested by police, right?
Yes, the litigants and the justices did briefly touch on this the other day. With respect to the Eighth Amendment, there is a question about whether this is just being applied to homeless people or the unhoused population. And the litigants said, no, it's not. And one of the complications of this case is that the police officers implementing the ordinances and acting on them have some discretion as to whether they issue citations in a particular case. But of course, unequal application is certainly a broader issue. There wasn't an equal protection claim raised in the case. And generally, it probably would not be a winning claim either.
Can you just, you touched on this, but step back for a moment and just remind us why the Eighth Amendment is at play here and why it's something that's being closely watched with regards to the way these justices rule.
Sure. As I mentioned earlier, the Eighth Amendment ordinarily applies to typical punishments like the death penalty. Is it constitutional or not? Is it cruel and unusual? But there are a couple of Supreme Court cases which were decided in the 1960s where the court said that under the Eighth Amendment, under the cruel and unusual punishments clause, you can't punish a status. We call them status crimes. So, for example, in Robinson, the court said you can't criminalize the status of being addicted to narcotics. But in that case, the court said you can criminalize taking drugs, right? So you can criminalize the conduct, but not the status. And so one of the questions is, where is that line between status and conduct?
Yeah, and we have actually a clip here of Justice John Roberts. He's talking about that line, essentially, when he's questioning the U.S. Deputy Solicitor General, Edwin Kneedler.
Eating is a basic human function as well that people have to do, just like sleeping. So if someone is hungry and no one is giving him food, can you prosecute him if he breaks into a store to get something to eat?
What was John Roberts doing here, Meg, in terms of, you know, asking this other question about whether, you know, being a robber is a status, or, you know, being a burglar is a status or something like that?
Right. And a lot of justices raise this question about the line drawing.
Yeah.
They're questioning what we lawyers often call the slippery slope. If the court extends the status to conduct that is involuntary. So if you are a homeless person and you have no choice but to sleep, and therefore you sleep in a public area, which is contrary to the ordinance, what happens if we apply that same rule in other contexts, such as if you're hungry, then is it okay to steal food? And that would be, it would be cruel and unusual to punish theft. And so the question is, if we have a rule in the Eighth Amendment extending that line between status and conduct, or setting that line between status and conduct, how does it apply in other situations as well?
Right. And you mentioned earlier that Amy Coney Barrett, Justice Barrett, seemed to want to preserve some of that idea of status, which was set up in the Robinson case. Let's just hear a little bit of that cut.
Speaking of status and conduct, you've argued that Robinson was wrong and we don't need to overrule it. And I agree. I don't think we should overrule Robinson.
Why was that moment significant to you, Meg?
Well, I think coming into oral arguments, there was a real question about whether the court was going to overrule Robinson and say that status crimes really don't appropriately fall under the cruel and unusual punishments clause, because it's not really about punishment, it's about criminalization in the first place. So as I was listening to oral arguments, I was looking at or listening for whether the court might uphold Robinson or overturn it. And that's sort of in the bigger picture of the Eighth Amendment prohibition on cruel and unusual punishments. The court has been chipping away at protections on the cruel and unusual punishments clause. So I was curious as to whether they would overrule the Robinson case. And at least that Justice Barrett thinks it's appropriate to maintain Robinson here, I think there's less of likelihood that the court will overrule it.
Let me go to caller Janet in Berkeley. Janet, you're on.
Hi. I just want to say I have been a social worker for over 35 years and worked in the emergency rooms of several hospitals, county hospitals on both sides of the bay. And my experience has been, unfortunately, consistent. Many of the homeless patients that come into the emergency room come in. They get medical treatment, whether they're admitted or they're seen just in the ED. And they oftentimes will say they don't want to go to a shelter once you've identified a place for them to go, because they want the freedom to be with their community and to continue to use drugs. And so, and I've had people openly say to me, no, I don't want treatment. No, I don't want to go to a program. No, I don't want to go to a shelter. And the challenge has been also, as that's frustrating and painful, but it's choice. It's someone having a choice. Mm-hmm. And so some of the encampments are about people feeling like it's their community. So even if shelters are available to them, it doesn't mean that they don't have access. sometimes access is about what the person's individual choices are. And then the second part is, as a homeowner, the challenge for me, and I think homeless advocates just seem to forget, part of the aversion that some people have to seeing homeless encampments is all the garbage and all the stuff that's there. And are the cities being asked to clean that up? I don't think so. Are the encampment members or the people living in those communities being asked to at least put the garbage in a bin or do something else with it instead of letting it pile up? And I think the public has a right to go to a park and not have their children see someone using meth. Many days when I walk to work, I see people using meth right on the streets, right in the park. And that's challenging. That's really painful. Seeing people shoot up in the morning is painful because you see the pain. You see their bodies in horrible shape. And yet that's not something that you want to do when you go to the park with your child or with your family to read a book. And so there's some imbalances. And I think we need to look at taking ownership from multiple perspectives. And I think the guy who gave the example of the property owner building, putting a space in their driveway, we all know as Californians how much we pay for property tax. So if you are paying the tax for that driveway, you should have the right to put what you want on the driveway as we pay for our public parks. But we can't always use the public parks anymore.
Well, Janet, you raise some important points, and I want to get Marisa just to weigh in on a couple of them. Marisa, for example, the part about refusing available shelter, is that an issue in Grants Pass?
So that came up in the arguments. It's not really an issue specifically in the city of Grants Pass because they don't really have shelter options available. But the justices did talk about it in other cities, you know, that do have shelter options. And they talked about what constitutes the option of shelter, right? So if someone is unhoused and they have a severe mental illness, that makes it really hard for them to be in a crowded shelter with other people. If they go there, it could harm their mental health. And that's all they're offered. Does that count? Or if someone has a dog and they don't go to a shelter because a shelter won't accept dogs and they don't want to give up their pet, does that count? So a lot of experts will tell you, you know, the solution to that is to provide a lot of different types of shelter options that can really apply to different people. And it'll be interesting to see how the Supreme Court rules on that and if they explicitly dictate what types of shelter options have to be provided.
Megan Ryan, what do you think about that in terms of whether or not if someone refuses shelter because they don't feel like it's adequate for them, that counts as not being available shelter?
Yes, and the justices talked about that in terms of whether the status of homelessness creates involuntary conduct, which should be protected under the Eighth Amendment. Again, I think the more liberal justices were more accepting of the idea that involuntary conduct would fall under the Eighth Amendment. One of the tricky parts about this is under the Ninth Circuit ruling, which the court is looking at here, the work of ability of the rule is problematic in some sense because it requires the counting of the number of shelter beds available and the like. And this question makes it even more difficult as to whether we're going to count these people if they don't want to go to shelter and what is the reason they don't want to go to shelter because they have a dog or a mental illness or some other reason. So the existing rule under the Ninth Circuit is problematic in that sense, and I think the Supreme Court justices are going to try to avoid having an intricate rule like we see under the Ninth Circuit.
And to Janet's second point about the health and safety of everyone, both the unhoused and the public who is affected by encampments, actually, Grants Pass's attorney, Theane Evangelis, spoke about that during oral arguments as well, reflected sort of Janet's view here. Let's listen.
The need to reverse Martin is so critical because laws like ours, they really do serve an essential purpose. They protect the health and safety of everyone. It is not safe to live in encampments. It's unsanitary. We see what's happening. And there are the harms of the encampments themselves on those in them and outside.
That's the Theane Evangelis. Let me go to caller Petra next in Oakland. Petra, you're on.
Hi, good morning. I was thinking that we don't need to do all these court cases and all the hatred and all the agonizing and antagonizing if we rebranded being unhoused. Like we do the same thing that big corporations do. And I've worked with unhoused people in a variety of health fields. And really know their plight. So we can just say, these are people that weren't little kids that were dreaming about, hey, when I grow up, I want to live in an unsafe condition. I want to not know where to go to the bathroom. I don't want to shower. I want to be unhealthy. I want to fear for my life. We got to think about people like, wow, this is not really a choice. They didn't start off life like we did in some kind of pole position. If they could get it together, I don't think they would be in the streets. If they had what we have, like agency to make a decision in the sense like, I'm thinking about 3 years from now. This is living in now because life is so in danger. And if we rebranded this, there would be more empathy and there would be a little bit more basis for friendship or for working together and saying like, hey, you know, let's clean this up together. Hey, let's get you some trash bins where you can put your stuff. Or I understand being off drugs hurts. So it's hard. If you refuse treatment, it's like you don't want to be in pain. Withdrawal hurts. And just understand those things better in order to live together happier.
Petra, thanks for sharing your perspective as a social worker. Marisa, do you hear from the unhoused or the advocates for the unhoused that this case feels very dehumanizing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why you saw people throughout California and in Washington, D.C. Take to the streets and rally in front of courthouses yesterday, really trying to push back on the idea of criminalizing homelessness. You know, and as a lot of experts have pointed out, you know, ordinances, no one's arguing that ordinances like this are going to solve homelessness because they don't provide housing. And, you know, that's what people need to get back on their feet.
Let me go next to caller Julian in Santa Cruz. Julian, you're on.
Hi, I work for a homeless services agency doing policy research. I just wanted to say first that criminalization always means that people end up stuck on the street longer. It makes it harder for us to connect with them, to get them the services they need, and to help them get back into housing. And so laws like this, anybody who wants to see fewer people on the street, these kinds of laws achieve the exact opposite end. And then the other thing I wanted to say is that I heard at the beginning of the program, there was some discussion about how this is like, this could be a landmark change for California. It doesn't have to be a change at all. Nobody said that about the Supreme Court's abortion ruling because we knew California was going to protect our rights there. As long as we demand from our communities that they can continue compassionate care, this doesn't have to change anything, but we have to demand that from our communities, and I hope we all will.
Well, Julian, I appreciate the points that you are making. I want to also ask you, Professor Ryan, just about his point about criminalizing encampments. My understanding is that in addition to criminalizing, there's also a prohibition on civil penalties as well, and that's something that California is bringing up as a challenge?
So there is something that the justices didn't talk about much yesterday, although Justice Thomas did touch on it. And we're talking about the cruel and unusual punishments clause, which deals with punishment. But in this scheme, we actually start with civil violations, civil citations, and then only if you have two of them are you issued an order not to be in the parks for 24 hours. And if you violate that, it's a criminal trespass, right? So then you can go to jail. So there was some question about whether this should be even considered punishment at all. Under the Eighth Amendment, we usually are talking about punishment, and the court has been pretty strict about that. But the Robinson case and Powell case, where they talked about criminalization of a status, is a little bit set to the side of that. But ordinarily, states, at least with respect to the Eighth Amendment, states and cities can do what they want with respect to civil violations.
Listener Sean writes, the unhoused are seizing public property for private use. When camps are built with tents, the space is no longer accessible to the rest of the public. Lubov writes, without services, enforcing the law against sleeping in public is falling far short of what is needed. You, our listeners, are weighing in on the Grants Pass case, what you think of Grants Pass's attempt to outlaw sleeping in public, what your questions are about the case Grants Pass versus Johnson, where cities have said that there are too many restrictions on cities trying to address encampments and they need to be eased. We'll have more after the break. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're looking at how the Supreme Court could rule in Grants Pass versus Johnson, what we heard in oral arguments yesterday, and what the implications of this case could be for California. We're joined by Marisa Kendall, a homelessness reporter for Cal Matters, and Megan Ryan, professor of law at Southern Methodist University. And we're joined by you, our listeners. Do you feel like city's hands are tied when it comes to addressing homeless encampments? Do you feel like the constitutional rights of unhoused people are in danger with this case or potentially jeopardized by this case? Do you have experience with homelessness or encampment sweeps? Are you a city official or worker? What's your experience trying to move people to shelter? The email address is forum@kqed.org. Our social channels are on X, Instagram, @KQEDForum. Our digital community is on Discord. You can call us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. This listener writes, it has been very difficult to teach my child compassion when we see unhoused people maybe showing open sores or having fallen who start to yell at us occasionally in a slurred voice, often seeming angry and getting in our faces. This causes fear in my child, not compassion. Dee writes, I know that Grants Pass, Oregon has some severe weather conditions. Can you speak to why it has so many homeless people? Marisa, I don't know if you can speak to that, but do you know about the weather conditions?
Yeah, I mean, research basically shows that cities that have a high number of homeless residents, it's directly tied to the cost of living. California has an enormous homeless population, not because we have nice weather, but because housing prices are so high. So I assume, but probably similar reasoning in Grants Pass. And like we mentioned, there's really no indoor shelter options for people. So that can be too a reason why you see large tent encampments if there are no shelter beds that people have access to.
Let me go to caller Cynthia in Oakland. Cynthia, you're on.
Yes, thank you. I work with the safety net population. I work with the unhoused. And what I want to say is the issue of shelters, it's very complicated. Not everybody is a fit for shelters. They may have mental health issues, paranoid issues, and they are not a good fit. Then let's talk about the shelters themselves. Some of them, people are sleeping on a mat. And I realize that, it is a shelter bed. And they're very fearful. Some are very fearful about their belongings being stolen while in a shelter bed. And that does happen. Their ID gets stolen. And the backpacks get stolen. And there is a risk of communicable disease also. So it's not like these shelters are perfect. And there's not a whole lot of shelter space available in various counties. And what I would like to say in terms of the encampments, I think Oakland is doing some of this. Let's bring some of the municipal services to the encampments. There are showers. They could put up portable showers, and they could possibly, toilet facilities available.
Well, Cynthia, actually, and even in Grants Pass, there's an organization called Mint that does that too. Right, Marisa?
Yeah, you're really seeing a lot of those types of services increase throughout California, too. As you know, we see these huge encampments, we don't have enough shelter to get people inside. You're seeing a lot more money be spent on portable showers, on trash services, on food, on backpack medicine clinics, on things like that, just to make the encampments a little safer and a little more bearable.
And do you know how those types of services are viewed in a city like Grants Pass?
You know, for the people that I haven't been to Grants Pass, but for the unhoused communities I've spoken to in California, you know, those can really be lifelines. They can really make life a lot more bearable. Of course, you know, the gold standard would be housing, but until that happens, it's a lot better to have somewhere to put your trash and somewhere to shower and go to the bathroom than to not have that.
Let me go to Stephen in San Francisco. Stephen, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I'm a business owner in San Francisco. We have 35 employees, an architecture office, and it's at the edge of the Tenderloin. And we're inundated with an unhoused population and with a lot of drug use. And so we see every day the pain, and it's hard. And I think, and a lot of our employees think, that a range of options needs to be part of the equation. And what I mean by that is some voluntary options, and then at some point, probably some compulsory options. Because what we witness is a lot of outreach to this population, to these people on the street, and they refuse service. They refuse beds. They refuse drug treatment and those kinds of things. But in the meantime, the refuse, the feces, the crime is hurting our community. It's hurting this neighborhood. It's hurting our business. And it's just suffering that I think at some point needs a little bit firmer hand than just offering help.
Well, Stephen, thank you. Yeah, for sharing your basically, you know, your angle, and also from where you sit. And then also, Cynthia, I should thank you as well for sharing your view as a social worker in the safety net unit as well. I think you're both raising points from your perspective, which is very useful to hear. I guess what I would love to hear, Megan Ryan, is the different ways the court could rule in this case and whether or not it would address some of the concerns that our listeners are raising.
After listening to oral arguments, I think it's likely that the court is going to issue a pretty narrow ruling in this case. And my guess is what the court is going to do, or at least the majority of the court, is going to say that Robinson, the case from 1962, limits the prohibition of criminalization of the homelessness to just not allowing criminalization of the status, and that here the law criminalizes the conduct, and so it's not an Eighth Amendment violation. But there are a couple of other things the court could do. As I mentioned earlier, I think the court could say that the Robinson case was wrongly decided and that there's no question of an Eighth Amendment violation at all here, and instead it falls under the Due Process Clause, which is much broader and vaguer in some ways. There's also the possibility that the court could dismiss the case as improvidently granted. And what that means is that the court sort of made a mistake in granting cert in the case. And why I say that's a possibility is because there is an Oregon law that has since been passed, pretty much, and we haven't seen how it exactly applies to this case, but it suggests that the Grants Pass ordinances would be in violation of state law anyway, and that their solution in this case would just could be limited to reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions, just more gently in some sense, limiting the time at which people could camp, the way in which they could do it, the places they could do it.
So essentially, they could punt really a clear decision on how cities can move forward if they determine those things.
I think that's a possibility. From what the justices were, their questions yesterday, I don't think they'll do that.
Plus, they took the case, right? I mean, wasn't that a little bit surprising?
Right. It's not often that the court dismisses as improvidently granted, but it does happen in some cases. I must say, I was surprised that the court granted cert in the first place for this and some other reasons. So I think it's unlikely the court will do it, but it's a possibility, certainly.
Why were you surprised?
For a couple of reasons, I didn't think that there was enough of a circuit split. Usually the court looks at how all the different circuits, the Ninth Circuit, as well as the other circuits, have decided similar issues so that they can get a good range of arguments and rulings that courts have made in a case. And I didn't think there was enough of a circuit split here. Also, this Oregon law having been passed almost moots the case. It means that if the court decides it, it may not have a significant impact in this particular case because of the existing Oregon law. So for all of these reasons, I was sort of surprised that the court granted cert in this case.
Well, Tater on Discord writes, punishing someone for stealing food when they're starving is cruel and unusual, just as much as criminalizing homeless status. Homelessness is a society-wide wide failure. In a world where grocery stores throw out 10 to 20% of their inventory, it is unconscionable that anyone should go hungry. Another listener on Discord writes, in response to the caller who listed her various rights to not witness homelessness or the consequences of it in any way, actually, that's not a right. That's a personal preference. Another listener on Discord writes, if the court criminalizes homelessness, then we should first end homelessness. Homelessness is a policy issue. I'm wondering, Megan Ryan, if it doesn't go narrow, if the U.S. Supreme Court gives cities, overturns, you know, the Ninth Circuit, gives cities wide discretion to pass restrictive homelessness laws, do you think they would do that? Because there was that point by Julian that, you know, they don't necessarily have to.
Go ahead. Court says that this doesn't even fall under the Eighth Amendment and instead is a due process issue. And a couple of more conservative justices, I do think, maybe would go that way. If that's the case, I think we have a separate question whether this is a due process violation. And the court has been cutting back on the due process clause as well. And so, for example, in the Dobbs case, which is a totally different context, we see the court cutting back on due process protections with respect to women's rights and in some other cases as well. The due process clause is sort of ambiguous, and that's why more conservative justices don't like it to be very expansive in scope. So I think it would give a lot more leeway to state legislatures and cities to regulate things as they see appropriate. But as a lot of the callers have suggested, this approach that Grants Pass takes may not be the most effective approach to deal with these types of issues. But when the court usually leaves something to the states or to the cities, it's trying to foster federalism, this idea that each state or each city can engage in experimentation with policies. And by looking at each other, perhaps the best approach will eventually emerge and we can learn from each other's successes and failures.
Marisa Kendall, do you have any sense of what California would do if the Supreme Court overturned the lower court's ruling?
Yeah, just based on where Gavin Newsom has come down, I feel like it's unlikely that he is going to write a sweeping law regulating how cities manage encampments. And also, at least in your large liberal California cities, I don't think you're going to see repetitions of what happened in Grants Pass just because they don't want to be seen as criminalizing homelessness. You know, even cities like San Diego that recently passed a really controversial camping ban, it's written into their ordinance that you first have to offer shelter and you can't just prohibit someone from camping in the whole city if there's no shelter for them. So I think if it's overturned, you probably will see more encampment sweeps. You'll probably see less successful lawsuits stopping them. But I don't think you're going to see as strict of a policy as happened in Grants Pass.
Let me remind listeners, you are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Let me go to caller Dano in San Jose. Dano, you're on.
Hey, how's it going? I just had a quick question for you. Has anybody looked into the impact on the actual criminal system, if it can support potentially making this criminal act, like housing all those people in jail, for example? That's really what I was focused on.
Dano, thanks. Megan Ryan, do you have any sense of how this was brought up in the context of this case?
I haven't seen it really raised so much in the context of this case, but as a lot of people know, we have mass incarceration problems in this country where we have more people in prison than in almost any other country in the world. One way that the criminal justice system deals with the vast amounts of people coming through the criminal justice system is to try to pressure people to plead out, and sometimes through diversion programs too. So offering them other things, treatment programs, for example, and getting them enrolled in that and completing that rather than sending them to jail or prison.
Megan, I want to ask you about something you've said, which is that this case, and I think you've touched on it a little bit in your answers, but I would just love to hear, you said that this case gets at a fundamental schism in not only the legal community, but politics more broadly. What does this case represent in terms of that schism that you're talking about?
Sure. As we saw in oral arguments, the justices seem to be breaking down somewhat along ideological divides.
Yes.
And I think we see that probably in the population more broadly as well, although maybe a little bit different, especially in cities on the West Coast where you tend to have more liberal populations. But anyway, one thing that the Supreme Court justices have been grappling with in a number of cases in the Eighth Amendment and outside the Eighth Amendment is whether we ought to keep the government out of states and cities' business, or sorry, keep the Supreme Court of states and cities' business and let people do what they want, right? And have sort of very limited constitutional protections. And the conservatives seem to want to sort of limit those constitutional protections. And I think we see that also in a lot of arguments in the polity as well, on lots of types of issues, homelessness, and other issues as well.
Well, listener Pam writes, if we could stop grouping individuals without homes into one category, we might be more successful. There are some individuals who go to work every day. They just do not have enough money for the down payment and security to get a rental. There are runaways, those who are addicted to drugs or have mental health issues, and individuals who are just facing a difficult time. There is no one-size-fits-all solution. We need boots on the ground that can address the underlying individual cases. Another listener tweets, I was homeless for some years after a grave injury. With the enormous amounts of money spent that already could have built many beautiful shelters with many connected assistant services, what and where is the ineptitude? You know, Marisa, I was struck by something the mayor of Grants Pass, Sarah Bristol, told the Washington Post. She said that the national attention from this case has distracted the city from taking action that would meaningfully address the crisis, like building housing or shelter, and that whatever the court decides, Grants Pass will still be left in the same situation with hundreds of unhoused residents who will still need a place to sleep. Quote, she says, so to me, none of this has been a win. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a great point. And it's something I heard from experts yesterday, too. Just, you know, you have to remember, no matter how this case comes out, there will be no housing built as a result of it. So it will not end anybody's homelessness.
Yeah, the ruling is not going to change the fundamental and very complicated reasons. We have a growing number of unhoused people and others on the edge of homelessness and other so many people who are vulnerable, as Pam helps us think about. And so, Megan, other analysts have been saying no matter what, there will be some pulling back of rights for the unhoused, that chances are this is not going to be a win for them in some form. Do you think that that's true?
I guess I'd be hesitant to say no matter what, but I think it's very unlikely that the unhoused population is going to benefit from the decision that the court ultimately hands down. Either I think the court is going to say that the Robinson prohibition under the Eighth Amendment is strictly limited to status and not extend to even involuntary conduct. Or if it goes under the due process clause, the rights, I think, will be severely limited as well.
Megan Ryan, professor of law at Southern Methodist University, thank you so much for being with us. Marisa Kendall, homelessness reporter for CalMatters, appreciate you being on as well. Appreciate our listeners as always, and Caroline Smith for producing this segment. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.